Welcome to the Christian Science Monitor. I'm Philip Moore for Radio Reading Services. This week I'm reading from the August 26, 2019 edition of the Christian Science Monitor Weekly. The cover story this week, The World's Language Lab, Why Queens, New York has a diversity of tongues unrivaled in history. The article is by Harry Brunius of the Christian Science Monitor. Here is an introductory article by editor Mark Sappenfield, which will provide some background and context for the main article. Editor Sappenfield's headline this week, While the World Needs Isarsenek, I-S-E-R-S-A-R-N-E-Q. It might not seem like a terrible tragedy that no one alive looks at the vertical groove between the nose and the upper lip and thinks, Sinek ok, ugh. The last person who did, Marie Smith Jones, was also the last person who spoke Eyak, E-Y-A-K, an Alaskan tribal language. She died in 2008. A year earlier, linguists made recordings of Charlie Mundunga in the outback of Australia's Northern Territory, frantically trying to learn as much about Amurdag, A-M-U-R-D-A-G, one of the continent's more than 200 Aboriginal languages, before the last person who knew how to speak it was gone. In this week's cover story, staff writer Harry Brunius looks at Queensborough of New York, the most linguistically diverse spot on the planet. As many as 800 languages are spoken there, but his story is also one of loss, of how many in Queens are linguistic refugees, some of the last people alive to speak their language. As they assimilate into America, they hasten the disappearance of their mother tongues. Much has been written about the mass extinction of species today, but linguists point to a similar extinction of language. One of the world's estimated 6,800 languages dies every 2 weeks. Some 80% of the world's population speaks one of only 83 languages. The forces can be malign, dominant cultures forcing others to abandon their language and culture, but they can also be a byproduct of a sourceless assimilation as the world draws closer together. At what cost? For speakers of vanishing tongues, something intimate and dear is fading, as economic and climate pressures compel Marshall Islanders to leave their homeland. Springdale, Arkansas has become home to the world's second largest collection of Marshallese speakers. There's definitely the sense that if you don't speak Marshallese, you're not really a Marshallese person, an anthropologist tells Grist, an online magazine. The culture couldn't really survive without language. But there is a broader cost, too. One-third of the world's languages have no written system. The loss of a language is like the loss of a library filled with one-of-a-kind books. Language is a repository of accumulated wisdom and insight, a testament to the richness of humanity. In South America, the Kalawa, the Kalawaya, K-A-L-L-A-W-A-Y-A, use Spanish or Quechua in daily life, but also have a secret tongue mainly for preserving knowledge of medicinal plants, some previously unknown to science, notes a 2007 New York Times report. In Greenlandic, words contain complex concepts that speak to native people's untranslatable knowledge of their environment. The word Isarsenek, I-S-E-R-S-A-R-N-E-Q, for example. This is the wind in the fjord that comes in from the sea, and it can be hard to get home, but once you get out of the fjord, it's nice weather. As a verb-based language, Algonquin speaks to a fundamentally different worldview, focusing more on actions than things. Speaking of how this changes perception, an article by the Global Oneness Project asks, "What if God were a verb, an unfolding dynamic processing?" Queens has been called a Noah's Ark for languages, where they can be studied and shared before they vanish. There is much to learn. Editor Mark Sappenfield can be reached at his email address, editor, E-D-I-T-O-R, at csmonitor.com. Now for the cover story by Monitor writer Harry Brunius, The Noah's Ark of Languages. With 800 dialects, the New York borough of Queens is the most linguistically diverse place in the world. New York, like many immigrants who live near the busy subway hub in Jackson Heights, Tenzin Namdahl usually talks to her family and friends with a shape-shifting array of tongues. She'll jump from colloquial Tibetan to standard English in the middle of a conversation, and then start speaking what she says has become a third hybrid of slang, combining the phonetics of both. She also speaks fluent Hindi, the language she prefers when hanging out in one of her Queens neighborhood's famed local restaurants or one-of-a-kind shops. Despite this easy fluency in several languages, Ms. Namdahl becomes wistful when it comes to one she hasn't quite mastered, the native tongue of her mother, whose people speak a rare Himalayan dialect called Mustangi. Only about 3,000 people in the world still speak Mustangi, and most live in a remote Himalayan region in western Nepal. But a few hundred or so of those speakers, including Ms. Namdahl's mother, now reside in the New York borough of Queens. This also happens to be the most linguistically diverse neighborhood on Earth, scholars say. With as many as 800 distinct languages, Queens has a diversity of tongues and dialects unprecedented in human history, and its epicenter is here, amid the concentrated din of Jackson Heights. Linguists estimate that up to half of the 7,000 languages spoken throughout the world today are likely to die off by the end of the century, most succumbing to a number of homogenizing forces in the modern world: global capitalism, digital media, as well as the long-standing political efforts of national leaders who believe that a single nation-binding tongue will strengthen the country's cultural cohesion and economic efficiency, are only of a few reasons so many languages are disappearing today. "Sadly, my mother didn't pass down her language to me," says Ms. Namdahl, whose family lived among the Tibetan diaspora in Dharamsala, India, before immigrating to New York. "So it's hard to really explain this right now, but it's like I feel I'm on the outskirts of my own community." With her mother, she often attends a local Buddhist temple, which Himalayan immigrants in the United Sherpa Association established in a former Lutheran church just a few blocks from Jackson Heights subway stop. Inside, leaders have posted a large poster with a tree of the five major Sherpa clans and their 29 collective sub-clans, most of which speak their own dialect. And in a neighborhood that New York foodies have long considered home to the best and most authentic of global cuisines, food from the Himalayas has attracted national fame, to the chagrin of many locals, weary of all the outsiders. Lhasa fast food, a dumpling or momo shack, tucked behind a cell phone store and without a storefront or sign, was made famous after a visit by Anthony Bourdain, the late traveling TV host. The Kali Kitchen, just around the corner, specializes in Mustangi cuisine. In many ways, Miss Namdahl's longings are part of a classic story of immigrants who come to New York. The city has long produced a literature of essays, memoirs, and novels written by the new residents and first-generation Americans who long to find an elusive and self-grounding feeling of home, that's in quotes, even as they chronicle the uneasy liberty America provides to put aside the past and invent a new future. Part of this classic story, too, has been the well-intended reactions of immigrant parents like Ms. Namdahl's mother, who raised her daughter to speak the lingua franca of the wider community, the standard Tibetan used for commerce, government, institutions, and the traditions of Buddhism. What use could a language like Mustang offer her daughter? Now, if I go to a gathering of my mother's people, I'm not able to understand their words, so they don't really identify me as one of their own, because I don't know their language, says Ms. Namdahl. I want to feel connected. I want to sing with them. I want to dance with them. I want to share their stories and laugh with them. I can't do that. Yet, as she works through her ambivalent feelings about her hybrid identity, that's in quotes, an identity particular to this sumptuous diversity of Queens, the recent college grad decided to join a wider effort to document and preserve the growing number of languages about to become extinct throughout the world. For the past year, she has begun to learn the words of Mustangi, volunteering with the Endangered Language Alliance, a nonprofit in Manhattan that works with immigrant communities to preserve their dying languages, collecting their stories of local Tibetans in their native tongues. She's been recording them for the Alliance project, Voices of the Himalayas. Along the way, she is learning more about some of the other seven languages spoken in Jackson Heights' Tibetan diaspora, including her father's native tongue, Kirong, a three-tone Tibetic language spoken mostly in Nepal. Jackson Heights is the perfect place to preserve the world's tongues. Over the past decade, in fact, scholars have begun to focus more of their research on such urban immigrant communities, where in many cases there are more speakers of a rare language than in the region where it first evolved. This neighborhood, in particular, is like the Noah's Ark of languages, says Daniel Kaufman, a professor of linguistics at Queens College and the executive director of the Endangered Language Alliance. Others have used another metaphor from Hebrew scripture, calling New York Babel in reverse, its towers, in effect, acting as magnets for language diversity. We linguists talk about places like New Guinea and Vanuatu and Indonesia as having this incredible language density, a density that evolved naturally through a kind of linguistic speculation or speciation, says Dr. Kaufman, who also heads Queens College's new language documentation lab. But this area here came about through immigration, and it's really just a coincidence, Dr. Kaufman says, that Jackson Heights sits at the crossroads of language diversity. The immigrant communities clustered here happen to be from countries that already have the most spoken languages, including India, Nepal, the Philippines, and Mexico. Each of these countries has hundreds of indigenous communities that speak their own language. A number of rare European languages are also spoken in pockets of Queens. In the neighborhood of Astoria, some people still speak Vlaski, V-L-A-S-K-I, a Croatian Istrian tongue that sprang from nomadic shepherds who settled in the Balkans in the 16th century. Most of the world's remaining speakers of Gotchir, a Germanic dialect in what is now Slovenia, reside in nearby Ridgewood. Bukhari, the language spoken by Jewish immigrants from Uzbekistan, has been has more speakers in Queens than in the old countries. For linguists, there are scientific questions that can only be answered definitively by looking at the sum total of variation across human languages, says Dr. Kaufman, who speaks four languages fluently, including Indonesian, and is proficient in quite a few others. If we are ever to understand universal patterns in human language, it is only through this data that our theories can be supported or falsified, he says, about the importance of preserving rare languages. But there is also a certain power in being able to carry on traditions of one's ancestors in their original language, he says. Most languages of the world could be considered liturgical for their speakers, either historically or presently, as vehicles of unique spiritual practices. That is a major factor in language revitalization movements on this continent, as language revitalization is so often part and parcel of a spiritual revival linked to decolonization. Alex Paz may be one of a handful of people living in New York who speaks, I'm going to spell this word before I try to pronounce it, P-U-R-H-E-P-E-C-H-A, Pecha, an indigenous pre-Columbian language spoken in southern Mexico. Purepecha is not only rare, but is considered an isolate among human tongues, linguistically unrelated to any other known language in the world. There are things that can only be said in my language, says Mr. Paz, an immigrant from the small mountain town of Ukamichu in the Mohican region of southern Mexico. Even at home, I can see how my language is disappearing, and this means a lot of cultural aspects, too, because language, once we lose our language, I think that's the essence of who we are. Purepecha is one of the 68 national languages recognized by the Mexican government, yet linguists say there are actually more than 200 indigenous languages spoken throughout Mexico, making it one of the most linguistically diverse countries in the world. Today, Mr. Paz, too, has been volunteering for the Endangered Language Alliance, trying to locate and collect everything that's written in Purepecha over the past few decades. And while he hasn't found anyone else in New York who speaks this language, Mr. Paz has been immersed in it as he never has before, putting what he finds into a database and then providing word-by-word translations into English and Spanish. It's a complex and complicated task, since many of the language's words contain concepts nearly impossible to translate. Though only in his 20s, Mr. Paz worries that he may be among the last to learn his people's ancient tongue. His family immigrated to Pennsylvania 10 years ago, and his younger sisters, who don't speak Purepecha, may now never pick it up. He learned the language as a child by communicating with his grandmother, who doesn't speak Spanish. But since she still lives in southern Mexico, family members rarely get the chance to see or talk to her anymore. But it's not simply nostalgia or the immigrant longing for home that motivates efforts to preserve the world's dying languages, linguists say. Like the evolution of creatures, the complexity of human language virtually defines who we are, and every spoken tongue is rich with the experiences of life and culture. The loss of local language and of the cultural systems which they express has meant irretrievable loss of diverse and interesting intellectual wealth, wrote the legendary linguist Kenneth Hale. Only with diversity can it be guaranteed that all avenues of human intellectual progress will be traveled. The loss of any one language, he used to say, is, quote, like dropping a bomb on the Louvre. When a language goes extinct, in many cases, thousands of years of accumulated human knowledge are lost. Every language has enormous reserves of cultural, ecological, and even botanical information considered vital for local communities. This idea that sets of experiences become words and languages is not really correct, as if you're just kind of setting old experiences to a set of new words, says Dr. Kaufman. When people get into the revitalization of indigenous languages, it's really that those words have their own special use and their own special context that you'll only ever learn experientially. Yet, the ever-branching tree of human language has been replete with slowly changing hybrids and offshoots that often meet with linguistic end. And since hunter-gatherer times, violence and cultural dominance have been a major part of the evolution of languages. Modern English, in fact, began to form after the invasion of England by William the Conqueror in 1066, and the subsequent cultural domination of French speakers in Anglo-Saxon lands. The final page of the article. Similarly, centuries of colonialism and myriad nationalist projects in countries around the world during the 20th century created an active process of linguistic suppression and even elimination. These external forces then gave rise to the more subtle internal forces that Ms. Namdahl and Mr. Paz both know well. Shame to speak a native language. Even in the Tibetan communities in Nepal, there is a hierarchy of value attached to its many tongues. We speak the Lhasa dialect, the standard Tibetan language, part of Buddhist religion. And if you speak Lhasa, then you're respected, says Ms. Namdahl. Others are what you call, I'd say, a village language. On the other hand, older Mustangi women often assert their generational identity by speaking their ancient dialect, which has the effect of reminding young people that it's being lost in their culture. They tend to shame Ms. Namdahl, however subtly, as an outsider. Yet, at the same time, her mother made a conscious decision not to teach her daughter the language of her ancestors. There were a lot of layers to this, and from her perspective, she's right, Ms. Namdahl says. She didn't want me to deal with a lot of the caste system that was involved in the society of Nepal itself, or even in India. So she wanted me to become my own person, separate from my own community. But now we're living this generational world. We have to live in a cultural setting, and at the same time, we have to adapt to the newer modern world, she continues. But then we also have to stay grounded, while we have that pressure to stick with our culture and everything. Yet, from a language perspective, we have a lot of people, the next generation, I would say, most of them, they don't even speak Tibetan now. Mexico has made a lot of efforts to preserve its linguistic diversity over the past few decades, but Mr. Paz laments the educational policies that emphasize Spanish and similar kinds of shaming and intercultural racism when it comes to the country's array of indigenous people and the marginalization they often feel. It's like the language is the only thing that we have left, and its concepts, Mr. Paz says. I don't want to read somewhere or have to say, back in the day, Michoacan, we used to speak this language, Burapecha. It's sad, and I want to at least try to keep it alive and to keep it real. That concludes our time together and the article from this week's Christian Science Monitor. I'm Philip Moore for Radio Reading Services. Thanks for joining me. Join me next week when we take a look at another edition of the Christian Science Monitor Weekly here on the radio that reads to the tri-state, WRRS. Have a good week.